Today's guest, joining me from Mexico, is Claudia Meidel-Pozo, Executive Director of the Eon Resilience Lab Undersea Mines, a women-led action tank that works at the intersection of digitalization, new technologies, and society, with a strong focus on Latin America. We're going to be chatting about the metaverse. Enjoy and subscribe. What has happened in the last week that you've found interesting?
Few things. First of all, Geoffrey Hinton quitting Google. I need to look into that a little more. And I mean, it seems to be that the risks he's talking about, the reason he left Google was to talk about AI risks. And it seems that the risks he's mentioned so far are the ones that we were already on the lookout for.
The usual suspects.
Exactly. And the last season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is drop by drop coming out.
You'll have to tell me what that is. I've never heard of that.
It's amazing. It's about a woman comedian making it in the 50s. And it's all about being a strong woman in a man's world. So I think we can both relate to that.
Oh, very cool. Is it based on a real woman?
No, but it could be. It could be based on all of us.
So we'll be talking about the metaverse today, which is something that I have very little knowledge about. So I'm pretty excited about all the information that I'll gather. Could you start us off with letting us know what the metaverse is and how is it different from virtual or augmented reality?
There's no consensus on what the metaverse is. So I'm going to give you a general description based on what I believe it to be. And then I'm going to tell you what some people think that it should be this way. Or it will be this way. So it's going to be a bit of a long description just so that you can really have the full perspective and decide for yourself what you think. That's an interesting thing, right? What do you want it to be? That's what it will be in your mind. So first of all, the difference with augmented reality and virtual reality is that those are actually components of the metaverse. So first, maybe let's differentiate augmented and virtual reality for those who are listening and who aren't sure about the difference. Augmented reality, think about it like you're seeing, well, first let's start with virtual reality. Virtual reality, you put on those like glasses, headsets, and you're in a completely immersive world. You don't see the world around you. You are in, I don't know, you are in space, you are in a jungle. Augmented reality works through devices like your phone, like a tablet, where it superimposes digital elements to the real world. So you'll be using your phone and you see your house, but maybe there's a Pokemon there. And that Pokemon Go is a perfect example of augmented reality. It's putting a digital Pokemon that you can only see through your phone onto your house or the street. So that's the difference. And as it evolves, some headset developers of virtual reality are creating them kind of see-through. So it's kind of becoming augmented reality at the same time. So that's kind of like, that's becoming the term mixed reality. And I think in time they might converge and maybe we won't really have such a big differentiation anymore. So that's the difference between those two. In terms of the metaverse, that's a completely different topic. So some people believe that if you have an immersive virtual space, that is the metaverse. That is a metaverse. So according to those people, the metaverse already exists, and there is a lot of them. Now, that's not what other people believe, and I'm part of those people that have a different opinion. For me and for a lot of other people as well, the metaverse is a network of virtual worlds. So the idea of the metaverse is kind of like, okay, so you have different worlds, but how interconnected are they? So if they're not interconnected, you don't have a metaverse. If somehow there's interconnectedness, which honestly, interconnectedness, I think is maybe very utopic. Maybe it's more of a dream than it is going to be a reality, because every developer of a virtual world would have to follow similar standards so that they can easily be interconnected, so that you can go from being in this world to being in that world with the same avatar, with the same money, virtual assets, all of those things that you can have in the virtual world. That would kind of need to be transferable among worlds. So that would be the metaverse. So that's how it's different from augmented reality and virtual reality. If you see it in that way as a network of networks or a network of worlds.
Right.
Now you could have an internal metaverse, just like you could have an internal internet, you know, like an intranet rather in a company. But the idea of the metaverse is that it's like the internet and every web page is interconnected in one way or another. I mean, it's an interesting thing to be so at the beginning of a technology that you can't even describe it properly and people disagree.
We've had a podcast about quantum, so this I think this is a slightly more understandable than that, and that was pretty obscure.
Okay, but then this is a lot more understandable. And then there are different ways of looking at the metaverse. Some people are worried there will be a monopoly on the metaverse, which is kind of what the news, I think the media is sharing. I think just kind of because of their focus on fear mongering. But the utopian idea of a metaverse is that it's built on blockchain. So if you talk about the metaverse, you hear the word blockchain usually. And that idea is so that it's decentralized and no one really owns it and everyone can participate without middlemen, which currently exist on the internet. One way of seeing the metaverse is also the next evolution of the internet. So it's a really interesting animal.
Is it possible to imagine it as something that's not controlled by a monopoly or by, you know, a few corporations or something?
I mean, I don't think we've achieved that yet, but I think it's important to explore how it could be and at least ask a question and try to push for that. And then we'll see what happens. But I think there's a lot of lessons learned from previous iterations of the internet, web one, web two. Now we can learn from that to develop web three.
Where would you say that the metaverse is at in its in a line of existence from an idea to, you know, starting some sort of algorithms or starting ideas or even combining different realities? Where would you say we are? In fact, could you say that we're a few years from there being some version of the metaverse?
I think that really depends on the definition that you take of the metaverse. According to my definition of, well, it's not mine personally, it's the one I adhere to, of a network of networks where it doesn't exist. How far are we from it? I'll ask you a question in return. If you ask someone in the 90s, how far are you from the actual internet? What would they have answered? I guess it depends. Well, what stage of the internet are you talking about? The internet isn't a finite product, you know? So maybe if you interconnect two different virtual worlds, is that a metaverse already?
I mean, this is,
or does it
even
need to
just
be free?
Even just last year, I don't think we quite imagined that ChatGPT would be at the level that it is now. And the same thing with quantum. It could be tomorrow that we break quantum, or it could be in 60 years. It could be never.
Exactly.
So I guess we don't know. So I guess if we go a little bit more towards the augmented and virtual realities, how far do you think those have integrated into, I don't want to say our daily lives, but maybe into the systems, into more than just, you know, going to a conference and you can try on these goggles and see this, or maybe more than just gaming. So obviously it's being used in defense training, and it's being used probably in medicine.
It's not a new world. Things have been in development for a while, but what's happened is because of the change of Facebook to Meta, which put really a big highlight on the conversation of the metaverse, anyone working in related technologies like augmented reality or virtual reality suddenly became more, I don't want to say more important, but more popular.
What is Facebook Meta?
So Facebook. The company Facebook changed names. I think it was at the end of last year. They're focusing away from social media, or rather that's just one of their branches. They have Facebook, and then as a product, no longer as a company name. And then they have another area where they're focusing a lot on the metaverse. And that's kind of like their new bet. So originally their groundbreaking bet was social media, and now they're taking it to the next level with the metaverse, which they believe will also be the next stage for social media. And I mean, that to me, that makes sense. So there's been a lot of criticism because people are saying, oh, it's all about Meta. It's all about that company, which used to be Facebook. Without that having happened, we wouldn't be talking about this right now. It wouldn't be on our radar. It wouldn't be a topic that's being conversed in high level spaces with governments around the world. What does this mean? So it's interesting because they really put it on the map for everyone.
That's interesting because I was going to say that I'm extremely ignorant about that it was a name change. But then again, I'm not on Facebook. I haven't been for about 4 or 5 years now. But it is on, I see the topic everywhere. And then finding out that it's not actually completely in existence, it's interesting how quickly something like that can get into the media and into like serious table conversations.
Exactly.
Simply because whoever put it on that table of conversation has an insane amount of money.
There's been a lot of criticism as well because it hasn't gone well for the company. They've been losing a lot of money because of their investments in the metaverse. But at the same time, what they say is it's a long-term bet. So they know it's not something that's going to, you know, necessarily bringing money in the short term. It's something that they're preparing for in the long term. And I might go into this story of the metaverse. I don't know if you know where it comes from, actually, Odessa.
I have to admit I don't. Go
okay,
ahead.
That's a fun fact. It actually comes from a science fiction book by Neil Stephenson in 1992. So he imagined it as something completely from science fiction, and it is now happening.
Do you remember the name of the book?
The name of the book is Snow Crash. And it gave place to a few different movies, but I think that the best thing is just kind of to read the book. That's where the concept of Avatar comes from. In the book, you know, people have a real life, but they're also living and working in a virtual world. And as we spend more and more of our life online, and more of our life takes place online, it's not that we're just spending time there, we're actually living our lives. There's less and less of a disconnect between real life and online. And this tech philosopher from Oxford University, Luciano Floridi, would even argue that there's no more difference. And he's termed that coin on life. So it's everything that happens wherever you are. There shouldn't be really any differentiation, because I could see you next week, Odessa, and we could continue this conversation in person. It wouldn't be in a different world. You know, we're together here. We'll be together next week in person talking about it.
Yeah,
so that's,
definitely.
So that's really interesting. It came from a book. And I was at The Economist's, I think it was, yeah, the first Metaverse conference by The Economist last year. And Neil Stephenson was there.
Oh,
and
cool.
I thought, how crazy is that? That you wrote a book, a science fiction book in the 90s, and you're now at a conference about making it come to life. And he had a very, very narrow approach to it. He was saying it should be this way. It should be kind of unflexible. But I mean, I guess he imagined it. So if anyone's there to say it, tell us, or to have a strict opinion, it should be him. Now, should we do it that way or another way? That depends on what society wants or what the decision makers do. But it was really interesting to see how that evolves. I mean, science fiction,
it's also extremely fast. I mean, all the inventions and involvement of technology generally in the last 70, 80 years has been so quick. I was listening to a podcast last night of David Attenborough talking about how the BBC in the 50s asked him if he would join television, and he didn't know what, nobody knew what television was. And he was like,
crazy.
You know, how's that going to work? And what are we going to do on television? And so that's the 50s, which to me is very recently. So that's, yeah. So these things are pretty insane, but it's beautiful that a lot of these concepts, well, beautiful and often tragic, come from science fiction or any kind of fiction in the past. Let's
Definitely.
Move a little bit towards the ethical considerations. Facebook has probably the biggest amount of resources to dedicate to developing the metaverse and developing any kind of virtual reality. What should they be looking at in terms of the ethics? What maybe, you know, what are they looking at and what are they not looking at that they should be?
They have reached out to a lot of organizations across the world, including the organization I work for, which is SeaMind, to address those concerns. So maybe I'd start by listing three concerns. One of them is that, like, they're not in any particular order. I'm just kind of going to put them out there. But the first one would be, how inclusive can a metaverse platform be when, I mean, to reach it, you need to have, not only do you need to have internet infrastructure, you need to have connectivity, and you need to have it be of sufficient quality for you to be able to be in the metaverse, to create the illusion of a different world, right? So that's something that's a bit concerning. So there,
so that already discounts anybody that doesn't have a computer or access to the internet.
Yeah, that exactly. That's, I think that's also one of the most commonly heard of concerns. One of the ones the media pushes most. And I mean, they're very right. There, what's happening is that as governments adapt to, you know, 3G, 4G, now 5G, they're also considering what that means for the metaverse, which we know is coming. So I think it's an interesting point where we don't know what it is yet, but we're trying to prepare for it. In Mexico, the Federal Telecommunication Institute, the IFT, is creating different committees, one of them for small providers who provide services to areas of the population that are in very remote areas. So they're working with them to see how they can help them provide their services better and understand how to strengthen the infrastructure network across the country. And they've also created a 5G committee to explore what it would mean to improve connectivity and access to internet in the country. They're very aware of the metaverse. The country would need 10 times more technological infrastructure to have the power to provide the metaverse to people. And I mean, when we say the metaverse, it's a network of network, right? So it's not like you provide the metaverse. So the first problem, accessibility. Second problem, inclusion. How can you make sure that all communities are represented and are safe in the metaverse? That's a problem we already have with the internet. So if you look at the internet, whose perspective are you going to see most? Most of the internet is in English. That already means that a lot of people can't use it as much as English speakers. That means that a lot of perspectives aren't there. Now, if you go, okay, so there's a large part of the internet in Spanish, but what about in native communities in Mexico? How represented are they on the internet? How safe is it for them? So that's also going to be important with the metaverse, and something that kind of points to how that's going to develop, and it's not a good thing, is ChatGPT. So ChatGPT and all of these generative AI systems are trained with data that exists on the internet. But as I said, the internet is missing the perspective of a huge chunk of the population. So as it's embedded into our daily lives, we're marginalizing those groups even more. So how can we fix that? And that is something that Meta is working with us on. So we've had a few talks with leaders of marginalized communities to see how we can help them be included in the metaverse and how it can really become a place of plural voices and not just the leading narrative kind of squashing everybody else. Now, the two other topics that are very important, probably on everyone's mind, is privacy and security. So again, security for me, actually, all of these challenges are not new, right? The lack of infrastructure and accessibility and connectivity is not new. Exclusion, that's not new online. Security problems. I mean, those are very similar to the problems that people are already having on social media channels. So on social media, if you're not with the main narrative, you are going to get bullied, harassed, etc. That's going to be replicated and amplified in the metaverse. So suddenly these challenges that were already super important become even more urgent to attend. And again, I think what needs to be done here is an exercise of kind of piloting. Here I'm referring to metaverse as a digital world, not so much the network of networks. So I'm going to use that word now, digital world. So if you're in a digital world, how can you work with the developers to provide feedback and, hey, this is being my experience. How can I do that? For instance, I don't know if you saw that episode of Black Mirror where you could literally mute people around you and you wouldn't see them. And so they'd become this kind of gray figure and you couldn't hear them. One of the things that companies are exploring is how you can do that in the metaverse. Say someone's harassing you, just kind of delete their avatar from your field of view from your experience. So it's something that's being explored and developed. And I think what's going to be really important is to do it with the users, because they're the ones who know best what's happening and who could have the best ideas in terms of protection.
But then how do you differentiate between not seeing a bully and then not seeing everyone who's Black, or not seeing everyone who's, you know, a woman?
Exactly. This reminds me of, I think it was on Twitter, or it was on one of the social media platforms, where they wanted to reduce bullying. So what they did was they made a list of words that, for the people who created that list, that was bullying. And they said, okay, any tweet that includes this word will be deleted automatically. What happens is that some of those words, in it depends on the context, right? It's not always, I'm not always attacking you. If I say, you go, bitch, you know, that's like encouraging you. But if I say it in another context, I might be harassing you. And what happened, what's really interesting here, is that a lot of the words that the African-American community use, like the N-word, were on that list. So it ended up silencing the African-American community on that platform. There, that links with the problem of inclusion. Why was there not more diversity on that board that made that list, you know? So exactly, like you say, they all link somehow. And I was just going to touch upon the last one, which is privacy. One of the concerns with these virtual worlds, especially the immersive ones, so we're talking about virtual reality, it's going to be gathering a lot more data about you. I mean, social media, the internet already does. But if you're immersed in a virtual world, they can see where you're looking at, what interests you, infer more information about you. And I mean, it's a lot of sensitive data that they're going to be collecting, more than in the past, and new kinds of sensitive data. So again, it's an existing problem that's going to be amplified, massified. How can we control that? How can we regulate for that? I think that's something interesting, because a lot of regulators are kind of saying, oh, there's this thing called metaverse that's coming, and we get that it's risky, we need to regulate it. But really, for me, no, regulate first things first. You know, it's like regulating AI. Sure, that sounds great, but please regulate data privacy first. And that's the way the European Union went. But here,
or even just define AI before you try regulating it.
You know, exactly. The European Union is doing a good job in their proposal for regulating AI, but I think there's still a lot of gray areas. And I also wonder what happens to all of this work that's been done, like GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation that the EU launched a few years back and has not now been replicated in other countries, with generative AI. I mean, everything's going so fast.
Well, this brings me to what the role of governments is in regulation and in the development of any of these tools, because this is really difficult. We've had a lot of chats about this in at our events and in our podcasts, and it's no one really has a very good idea of an approach of how we can actually bring the governments to the table of the developers, or the other way around. They should basically meeting up and discussing how it could be regulated with all these things in mind that you said. So accessibility, inclusiveness, privacy, and security, but also simply fantastic advancements in technology that will do a lot of good, and how they can be used in places where they're not being used, because a lot of these regulators or a lot of these policymakers just don't understand it as much and could be using it in fantastic ways. So do you have any sort of tips on how this could better happen?
Yeah, and before I go into that, I'm going to go back to a question that you did earlier. And why is it good? Why should we look forward to this? And what is happening right now in Latin America? So a few interesting use cases that are happening. You mentioned medicine, and I think this is going to be amazing for medicine. Rather, it already is being amazing. But we're not going to talk about the metaverse yet, because it doesn't exist. Again, we're going to talk about virtual worlds and virtual reality more than virtual worlds. For instance, there's Johnson & Johnson opened a center here in Mexico City to help doctors in training educate or prepare themselves better for the real world. So rather than doing surgeries on dummies or corpses, the idea is that they can use these virtual reality glasses and perform surgeries on a real body, let's say, but it's a digital body. So there's less risk of harm. There's more opportunities to try different things. There's unlimited amounts of digital bodies you can try out on. So that's really interesting. And I mean, there are questions there, like, okay, what kind of bodies are they performing on? How may they differ depending on gender and other characteristics? But this is the beginning. Keep this in mind. So that's one interesting way it's being used. Another one in Colombia, they're using virtual reality to train policemen in different situations and see how they react and improve their response, their emotional approach to the situation. So maybe suddenly they're in a bar, a fight breaks out, what are you going to do? Another really interesting approach in Chile is using it to improve security in mining. So mining is a very dangerous business. I mean, you're underground, you never know what's going to happen. You need to be prepared at all times. What if your training wasn't there, but your training was in a virtual mine where you can't hurt yourself, you can't hurt anyone, because if you make a wrong decision, it's all virtual at the end of the day. So those are some interesting cases that are happening around the world. There's a lot of opportunity, and little by little they're being used, that those opportunities are being taken in education. How can augmented reality, for example, this is an experiment we're doing with the British Embassy. How can augmented reality improve education in primary schools? And a question we're also wondering is, okay, because of the pandemic, a lot of kids left school in Mexico, which was already a challenge before the pandemic. A lot of them haven't come back to school. What if they could take these classes from their own house and they didn't have to travel, I don't know how long and how complicated a trip to get to a school? So it's bringing services closer to people. It's helping with training in high risk environments. There's a lot that can be done. And again, but so a lot of the narrative that people hear is we're going to be working in the metaverse, and metaverse there understood as a virtual world. I think that part of our work will be done there, just like you and me are meeting on Zoom right now. And in terms now going to your question about the government's role. Yeah, I mean, the government cannot keep up. No one can keep up with tech development. It's going so fast. We need to form cross-sector teams. We've been kind of pioneering together with META, the Inter-American Development Bank, in Latin America, a new form of governance innovation. So the idea is, okay, so they're called public policy prototypes. So say something isn't regulated and you kind of want to, it needs to be, but who knows how, who knows what the way is. So one of the ways to do this is we put together this group where there's civil society through us, and then there will be another component I'll get to. The Inter-American Development Bank also kind of has that weight of doing things well, doing things responsibly. They bring in their expertise on different topics. And in Mexico, we're working with the Federal Data Protection Agency, the INAI, for those who are from Mexico who are listening. And what we do is we say, okay, in this case, we were looking at algorithmic transparency and explainability. So, okay, let's put together a framework proposal of what a normative framework proposal using international best practices and ethical guidelines that have come out, put it together, check it with experts in different fields. Perfect, got it. That's stage one. Stage two, you test it with different companies or government projects if they're interested in joining through an implementation program that can be as long as you want. You provide different support, technical, ethical, just follow up. And then when they're done with the implementation, you kind of have that feedback of how it went. Did it make sense? Was it too expensive? Is it prohibitive? Because we don't want to stifle innovation either. With that information, we kind of work on the normative proposal again, rework it, iterate it, and create public policy recommendations that go to the INAI, the Data Protection Agency in Mexico. So that's a really interesting way of working with the industry, civil society, the academics are in the group of experts to see what makes sense. And that's what's going to be really important, is that different kind of like innovative governance exercises happen, and the government is a part of them. And they receive that information. And that's at least one of the ways that we're innovating in terms of RegTech.
And last question, what is some music or any kind of visual entertainment that you're excited about right now?
I really hope Taylor Swift comes to Mexico. And I love how this is a world where you can, I think things are changing, right, for women in tech. But 10 years ago, had I said, I work in AI and the metaverse, and I'm excited about Taylor Swift concert, I would have lost any respect. But I love creating those spaces where we can be ourselves and, like whatever we like, but also be very good at our job. So If Taylor Swift is listening, come to Mexico.
I'm sure she listens to our podcast,
oh, for sure.
And we'll make sure to put you in touch.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss the next one.
If you want better insights into challenges and decisions you or your business are facing, Gary's analytical services are of unmatched complexity and high accuracy. Whether your questions are on the green energy transition, trade and supply chains, or political insecurity related, contact us for a free consultation and see how you can optimize your decision making. Thank you for listening. This has been Last Week on Earth with Gary. Until next time, have a great day.